welcome into Surviving Paradise, the podcast that takes a sometimes serious, oftentimes humorous look at the claim by Jehovah's Witnesses that they are living in a modern-day spiritual paradise. I am your host, Stacy Bauman, former elder, ministerial servant, most importantly, a little guy raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses in the 70s and 80s. As I do, a quick warning, we try to have fun here. We try to heal. Sarcasm, humor, tears, all those are from the host himself. Never meant to offend. Please know that. We invite any and all to be here, even if you disagree. We just try to have some fun and tackle some sensitive subjects from time to time. And I'm going to do that a little bit this week, as a matter of fact. We're going to tackle a subject that I've been wanting to at least get out there and validate for those who have had to deal with this or are dealing with it in the past. So let's jump right in. One of the things I miss most about childhood is how easily it was to get lost in daydreaming or fantasy. Somewhere along the way to adulthood, the vividness of imagination wanes. At least that's my opinion. I'm still a big daydreamer, and I find myself looking to the sky when I want to disappear into my own stories or my own thoughts, and I very seriously doubt that I'm alone in that regard. I personally, as I've shared on the show, I did grow up in the Bay Area, and clouds as well as fog came to life in this kid's head. I could just lose myself there thinking and daydreaming and fantasizing. Even though that word at times makes people uncomfortable, not meant to, there's all kinds, folks, for hours and hours at a time. But again, with age, the freedom to access your imagination is limited to stolen moments, with your adult brain dismissing many of your fantasies based on now maturity and knowledge. It becomes more of a guilty pleasure. Would you agree with that? As opposed to just drifting away to your own fantasy world or your own story or your own make-believe, it's just so much easier to do as a child. And I miss that. I wish we could have bottled that kind of freedom. And again, I doubt I'm alone on all this. I'm kind of going into a strange area right now. As someone that has been known to disassociate or retreat into my own world, I often wondered if it was healthy. And it turns out it is, as you'll come to see. Even one of the world's smartest people valued the gift of fantasy above all else. Going to one of my favorite guys and one of my favorite quotes from this smart guy known as Albert Einstein, he said, quote, "The gift of fantasy has meant more to me than my talent for absorbing positive knowledge," end quote. Would you look at that? I found a way to tie myself to the smartest guy that ever lived, at least by some people's standards. But the truth is, I agree with Einstein. A recent article in Psychology Today went as far as to say the following, quote, "Fantasies are imaginary, daydream-like scenarios that individuals play out in their heads. Whether conscious or unconscious, fantasies serve several psychological purposes and are a normal part of most people's interior world. Indulging in fantasies may seem like a waste of time, but they are far from frivolous. Most fantasies serve a specific purpose. They can be entertaining, distracting, frightening. Fantasizing about specific goals can foster creativity, help someone better understand their wants and needs, and even enable them to plan for the future. Some research suggests that those who report more frequent daydreams are more creative or more easily distracted than those who report fewer fantasies. Daydreaming is associated with greater creativity in children and heightened productivity in adults, and has been shown to help individuals solve complex problems," end quote. So there it is. I can personally rest easy. It's normal. It helps me work out problems. It's enjoyable. In fact, if you caught the underlying message here, it's even encouraged. So for someone that seemed in touch with his imagination, daydreaming, and fantasy, I was naturally attracted to much of what I was taught as a child inside of Jehovah's Witnesses, especially the characters and stories of the Old Testament in the New World Translation of the Bible. That's the only one they let us read because it came from them. I mean, that book, and the Old Testament in particular, had it all. Every boy is attracted to a hero's journey. And I've outed myself on this show before, but when bored during a meeting at the Kingdom Hall, I would open my book and I would read Judges chapter 3, the story of the left-handed warrior and judge, Ehud. We don't talk about him much, even in our time with Jehovah's Witnesses, but he was a guy I really liked based on this story, who went on to stick his sword into the gut of King Eglon, and his guts came pouring out. So says God's holy book. His guts came pouring out. Imagine that with a young boy. Huh, wonder what I liked. Give it a read. Won't be hard to see why I was so entertained by that story. But as I matured, and I became a teenager and then a growing adult living a Jehovah's Witness lifestyle, I came to grips with a few things. Many would argue that the Bible itself is a book of fantasy. How could anybody argue that? Talking animals, invisible spirits, giants, dragons, God's son enters a virgin's womb where he lives for 9 months. Doing what? None of us are sure. Jonah survives a pool of stomach acid and no oxygen inside of a fish for 3 days. Jacob is seen wrestling angels. David is slaying giants. Moses is splitting seas open. Look, the Bible in the Old Testament, it's fodder for those of us that get lost in our imaginations. I loved it as a kid. But now, Jehovah's Witnesses have entered the chat. Somewhere along the way, I began to realize something. Jehovah's Witnesses, as a religion and as an organization, have a strange and albeit dangerous relationship with fantasy. Check that. They might even have an evil relationship with fantasy. And yes, I realized most of this as an adult and in hindsight as someone that was, as a kid, drawn to their fantastic stories. With all of that said, there is the other side of fantasy. And as you might imagine, the other side isn't good. So while fantasy is encouraged in some cases by psychologists, it's even demonstrated to help us untangle problems. We might even enter the chats on dreams when we sleep. It also has a downside. And nowhere is that more true than with Jehovah's Witnesses. The entire life of a Jehovah's Witness is consumed in fantasy. And it is not an innocent experience, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's not just a fun daydream. All Jehovah's Witnesses are working toward the realized vision of what is, in reality, a fantasy. I've covered some of this in the past in one of my episodes, one of my favorites titled The Biggest Lie of All, if you want to consider more details. But to summarize, the vast majority of the estimated 8 million plus Jehovah's Witnesses today have lived their entire lives believing that they won't get old, they will achieve perfection in body, mind, and spirit, and that they will be living in a paradise earth any second now. For an outsider, even a religious outsider, it all sounds absurd. And friends, that's because it is. It's a fantasy. This all started in roughly 1935 when Judge Joe Rutherford, he of beer breath and a San Diego mansion, realized that pitching the planet on a hope that only included 144,000 people throughout all of human history would be allowed to go to heaven, that the numbers just didn't add up and it wasn't going to work. And while I'm dying to go into that in deeper detail, most of us understand the concept and it's a subject for another time. So as is new light with the leadership of Jehovah's Witnesses, he suddenly came up with a second class of people. He called them the great crowd, who would support the elite 144,000 that were going to heaven, and by doing so, would live in a magical paradise on earth, sporting perfect skin, animal friends, and other people who believed he was Jesus' chosen guy at that time. But it went further. He went on to establish that there would be an earthly resurrection of people. That's right. You would be reunited with those that had died. And then the best part of his fantasy, anyone who believed this fairy tale would never die at all. And right down to this very hour, we cannot confirm that he landed on this fantasy after downing a keg of beer and watching Peter Pan, but it sure sounds like it. And we can also confirm that Jehovah's Witnesses and the entire basis and foundation for the religion is based around this fantasy. It's undeniable. From the Watchtower, April 15th, 2005, page 5, we get this, quote, Jesus indicated that a similar day to the flood is coming in our time. Those heeding the knowledge associated with this event will have the prospect of not only surviving, but also living forever. In addition, the dead who are in God's memory will be raised to life with the prospect of never having to die again. All evidence shows that this day is very near, which means that you may never die at all. End quote. That is one of thousands, if not millions, of comments on a fantasy that was only created by Judge Joe Rutherford and his group known as Jehovah's Witnesses in 1935. Less than 100 years ago. How about one more? From the famous book, You Can Live Forever in Paradise on Earth, page 7, the dream sequence continues, quote, So then, why can we be so sure that you can live forever in paradise on earth? Why can we believe that everlasting life is not just a dream? End quote. The governing body keeps the fantasy alive by turning everything into a story that ends on a paradise earth. One such example comes to us from the Awake of August 22, 1986, pages 17 through 21, the series Paradise, Only a Fantasy? And it was written by an awake correspondent in Hawaii, something that has disappeared in recent years with the new faithful and discreet slave being only the governing body, but they used to do this. This correspondent in Hawaii wrote the following. It's an article that begins by describing the beautiful islands of Hawaii with its tropical beaches, the sand, the ocean. It's scenic. If you've ever been there, it's unbelievable. But by paragraph 4, we are hit with the real reason for the entire article, with the writer asking the following, quote, Granted, speaking of Hawaii, that it has natural beauty and spectacular scenery, yet is Hawaii really what you would consider a paradise? End quote. For anyone that has been to Hawaii or just seen pictures, yeah, we would consider Hawaii a tropical paradise. I don't think many people would argue that. But folks, that's not the purpose of this article. That's not the fantasy that they promote. Now, is it? The article quickly devolves into how awful the world actually is, including an answer to that question from a resident of Hawaii who says the following, quote, Well, maybe so in the past, notes a second-generation native of Japanese descent. Now, though, we have the same problems everyone else has. Traffic jams, congestion, pollution, and crime. As a family head and father of three, he observes, unemployment problems and the high cost of living make it difficult to provide for your family. Thefts and break-ins add to your concern, end quote. An article that starts out about the scenic beauty of Hawaii from a correspondent there quickly by paragraph four devolves into how awful life today is on planet Earth. You see, even Hawaii doesn't qualify as a paradise, not according to the governing body, because it doesn't include them and it's not their fantasy, their paradise. They want Jehovah's Witnesses focused on their fantasy, what they've imagined for mankind starting in 1935 with the drunk Judge Joe. A paradise that they continue to promote to this planet is not just a dream, it's not just a fantasy, it's a reality. And you want to hear note, if you haven't seen the past episode on this subject, that all of this is despite some concrete facts that any human being on this planet can examine and discern. How about just a few? One, the term paradise earth is nowhere to be found in the Bible. Nowhere. Neither is the term earthly resurrection. It only talks about a heavenly one. How about this? The word paradise is only found in the Bible four times, all four times referring to, you guessed it, heaven. How about this? The Bible actually makes reference to the earth lasting forever, and it also makes mention about the earth being destroyed forever. A bit of a contradiction I'll tackle in the future or, again, see past episodes, but it's not what you think. And finally, how about this? Jesus Christ, the King of Jehovah's Witnesses, never once mentioned a paradise earth hope or a secondary group of people. If you're now thinking, wait a minute, Stacy, yes, he did. What about John 10:16, where Jesus says he has other sheep not of this fold? Folks, let me lay that one to rest for you. Jesus, as you might remember, was a Jew. He was speaking only to Jews, his words not mine, and those other sheep he was referencing that weren't part of that fold he was speaking to, he was referring to Gentiles, non-Jews. He had Peter go talk to them, remember that? Not a heavenly versus earthly class that was Judge Joe's fantasy idea. Never was, never will be, not found in the Holy Book or the instruction manual from Jehovah himself. But Judge Joe's fantasy lives in the lives of Jehovah's Witnesses today. In a snap of his fingers, he had created an elite group of Christians, incidentally, he was the leader of during that time, a unique group of 144,000, and then he went on to create a second group that could only live forever if they associated with the elite group of 144,000. I can't imagine what this guy's motives were, can you? And this all happened in 1935. In the Watchtower of August 15th, 2014, page 21, we are told this, quote, in effect, Jesus also conveys Jehovah's voice to us as he directs the congregation through the faithful and discreet slave. We need to take this guidance and direction seriously, for our everlasting life depends on our obedience. End quote. So there's the foundation. You see, for this fantasy to become a reality, we needed and need Judge Joe Rutherford and the current guys in his position that came after him, namely the 2024 governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. And they successfully convinced millions of people for well over a century that this fantasy is a reality. Well, almost everyone. Consider what the late Ray Franz, who most of us and anyone who is on the fence or being exposed to the idea of not being a Jehovah's Witness likely recognize the name. The man was a hero by any other definition. But consider what he had to say about the fantasy they created and currently has millions of people trapped and wasting their lives. And remember, as someone that was on the governing body itself and then left the governing body, he could actually speak with authority about this dream sequence fantasy that Judge Joe had built. From an article on his website known as thecommentarypress.net of March 17, 2007, Ray Franz, he formerly of the governing body, had this to say, quote, "As for hope of life on earth, whatever augmentation may be presented using certain isolated texts or Hebrew scripture prophecies, I don't believe one could say that any comparable, clear, definite, full presentation of such a hope is found in the Christian scriptures. I'm not arguing against one's hoping for this, but I'm arguing for viewing it as simply that, a hope, and not something allowing for the conviction that God's clearly stated promises permit and encourage. My counsel then to anyone bringing up the question of earthly life and a two-class system of Christians is simply that they read the Christian scriptures with an open mind, trying not to let presuppositions influence their understanding." End quote. The great Ray Franz, who left the governing body, was eventually disfellowshipped, who most who leave this crazy, mentally diseased, apostate army out here recognize as a true hero. As someone who built these doctrines, who studied these doctrines, who wrote the Old Eight Book, who had a major impact on this organization, said, look, folks, in a nutshell, it ain't there. The fantasy ain't there. Just read the Christian Greek scriptures. And remember, he was someone who allegedly had a direct phone line to Jesus. And even he recognized that the fantasy wasn't found in the Bible. And I've got to add, if you're someone on the fence and you're scared of his books, he was a remarkable writer. I highly recommend both of his books, Crisis of Conscience and Christian Freedom. Outstanding if you're looking for a history of the governing body and Jehovah's Witnesses. But listen, skip all of that. Skip it all. Throw it out. Most of us likely know the fantasy. I just wanted to establish common ground here. Many of us were trapped in it. Maybe you're someone listening who has heard this story and you're contemplating a life as a Jehovah's Witness so you and your children can live in a paradise earth. You've seen the pictures. They're beautiful. Anything and everything you hear at a kingdom hall or at a convention will center around this fantasy. A perfect version of you, everyone you love, past or present, being there, living forever with the animals, enjoying a plant-based diet, singing songs in Hebrew, but only if you're associated with the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. End of fantasy. I have no interest in continuing to regurgitate the fantasy, the dream sequence. I lived it. I escaped it. My whole life was based around it. If you're passing a book cart this weekend, ask the Jehovah's Witness standing there what it takes to live forever in paradise. I guarantee you're going to eventually land on the summary I just reeled off. It's all very dependent on you supporting the nine guys in upstate New York. What I want to hear do is take the rest of our time together to explore something light years more interesting to me, and maybe it's because of where I'm at in my journey, more poignant, more important, and more powerful. What it means to live your life in a fantasy, and what it means to realize that it was all a lie. How to escape it. And for so many of us, whether you're new to this journey, in or out, navigating an almost arrested development as you face the rest of your life, if you're someone that's exiting something that you've believed in your entire life, I'm going to get a little bit emotional. I'm going to repeat myself for those that hate that. Welcome to OCD. It's a reality of my life, but it's something I'm passionate about. I want to start first with validation. It is a deeply, deeply damaging experience that creates tremendous pain for those who come to the conclusion that their entire life as a Jehovah's Witness is in fact based on a man-made fantasy. This is something that is damaging to all who come in contact with this religion, but seems to be particularly painful, and at least in my experience in conversations, for those who were born in or raised from a very young age around Jehovah's Witnesses. For those born into Jehovah's Witnesses, there is never another reference point in their life that helps them reason on it all. They were taught this as a young age, and they accepted it. This guy included. I just accepted it as fact and truth because I was little when I was first exposed to it. I never had another reference point. And in most cases, the only thing a born-in or young child raised as a Jehovah's Witness ever sees as truth is their full-blown fantasy they were told is a future reality. So imagine when they realize it ain't true. For the young people born into this religion, they didn't even get to choose their own daydream. And they were exposed by an avalanche of regular reminders that to not believe in this fantasy as a future reality would make them, in fact, an enemy of Jehovah anyway. And the end result of that is, of course, death and ending up as bird food. In my opinion, we tend to dismiss this factor all too easily. It's something I'm so passionate about. I'm not even sure I explain it correctly. I say that a lot, but I really mean it. I know in my case, I couldn't put my finger on what was wrong with me after I left Jehovah's Witnesses. Have you ever felt that? Is there anybody out there that's feeling that to some degree? It's incredibly painful. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. After, aside from losing all of my friends and a lifestyle I had totally embraced, I also realized it at one point on my journey out that I just didn't think correctly. Does that make sense? If you've left, maybe you can relate to that dynamic that I'm trying with a lot of difficulty to explain. There is this malaise that came over me. Who was I without the fantasy? What did I like? Where was I going? What do I do with all of this time on my hands? After all, I was a 7-day-a-week Jehovah's Witness. That was my lifestyle for many, many years. Now, after exiting, nothing. My entire life looked different, my schedule, everything. But then the more brutal aspects of leaving Jehovah's Witnesses truly hit me. And this is where I'm going to dig into some uncomfortable stuff. I'm going to get old. Wait, what? Yeah. I'm going to get old. I'm going to get sick. I'm going to die. As bizarre as that sounds to someone who has never been a Jehovah's Witness, it's very, very real for those of us that have. The emotions flood in and out of our life, our thoughts. They can range from depression and malaise to terror, nightmares, fear. I had personally lived my entire life inside this fantasy. I didn't worry about things like jobs or retirement programs. I didn't worry about owning property, or I wasn't preoccupied with my health. Why did I have to worry about that? I was going to have a perfect body, great skin. I was going to have six-pack abs. Remember, my mindset from the time I was a little boy was that I was going to live forever in a paradise earth. And now I have to come to face the reality. I've come to realize I wasn't. And Straight Talk, even at this late hour, 14 years out the exit door, there's times this can still be overwhelming. It's still emotional. With each passing day, you realize you're getting older. And I'll tell you, aside from last week's subject about faking it, the questions I get most all revolve around this. And I think a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses who leave don't contemplate this in the beginning of their exit. They're so hyper-focused, rightly so, on losing what is right in front of them. They're hurting due to losing family and friends. But I have to tell you, eventually, life without the fantasy starts to dawn on them. It dawns on all of us. All those years of conditioning and exposure to a fantasy deeply, deeply damages almost all of us. And it's been both fascinating and absolutely heartbreaking to listen to people try to explain to me this dynamic or what they're feeling or going through on their journey out. I got to tell you, it's really hard to look at somebody who's really genuinely scared. We're scared. And I want to tell you, it's okay to feel that way. It's normal. There is not only a huge void in our lives out of nowhere suddenly, but the fantasy is buried so deep within us that despite leaving Jehovah's Witnesses, you still have an almost peripheral belief in that paradise fantasy or what life looks like without it. How does this happen? How does that happen to good people? Just one example of how the governing body maintains control of a person's thoughts based on this dream sequence fantasy. So pervasive and strong is the message to not deviate from the fantasy of a paradise earth and living forever that they've gone after people's personal thoughts, daydreams, their imaginations, even what they call contemplations. To even contemplate something other than their fantasy is told to us to be deadly dangerous. Check out the reasoning on this from the Watchtower of 2015, May 15th, pages 24 through 28, under the articles, Imitate the One Who Promises Everlasting Life. It says there, quote, a shrewd person realizes that contemplation can be like a fire. If fire is handled properly, it can be useful, such as when it cooks our food. But fire is deadly when it is uncontrolled and burns down a house and kills its occupants. Similarly, my most hated word, contemplation is useful when it helps us to imitate Jehovah. End quote. That's right. It's covered a lot on this show because it's my fascination. Your thoughts, your imagination, your daydream, your fantasies are not your own anyway. If only they had applied the same type of reasonings to things like, I don't know, birthdays, how about blood, and a long list of other things I could get into and won't. Wait a second, fire can hurt you? You don't say, but you still use fire now, don't you? Someone got hurt at a birthday party in the Bible, so that means all birthdays are evil. You see how they work? It's kind of their own brand of reasoning. I'm going to stay away for now. But aside from imagination control and openly discouraging a person's right to contemplate things, there is the all-encompassing damage done to us as people, as Jehovah's Witnesses at one time or another, by a preoccupation with what is a lie, started in 1935. From Psychology Today, under the article, When Does a Normal Fantasy Become Unhealthy? We're told this by the doctors, quote, it's possible to become so preoccupied with a fantasy or the question of whether it's indicative of a pathology that it interferes with daily life or causes significant mental distress. Repetitive thoughts or fantasies may also be indicative of obsessive compulsive disorder, end quote. As someone who suffers from that and occasionally sees a YouTube comment how that irritates them on the show, I will just say it's real. We try our best. But to be preoccupied with something, I can't imagine what three meetings a week pounded into our head would do to us, can devolve quickly into really what is mental illness. And this is the perfect application to what a Jehovah's Witness faces during their life in a fantasy. We can never talk enough about the mental distress we all experienced inside that religion, or for those that are still in it, you're under the umbrella of. You know what I speak of. Am I going to make it? Am I good enough? Am I doing enough to get into paradise? What do I do with these wrong thoughts and desires I have? I know Jehovah sees inside my head. Then it all shifts to, forget it. I'm going to wave the white flag. I'm dead anyway. I've lost my shot at living forever in paradise, the fantasy. Even as you walk out the door of the kingdom hall in this religion, they're sure to remind you that you're losing out on Judge Joe's fantasy. The Watchtower of 2006, September 1st, pages 17 through 21, when a loved one leaves Jehovah, we are told this, quote, if so, whatever the reason, your relationship with Jehovah and your eternal prospects are at risk. Perhaps you intend to return to Jehovah. Are you vigorously pursuing this now? Or are you putting it off until the right time? Remember, the storm clouds of Armageddon are swiftly approaching. Moreover, life in this system is short and uncertain. You cannot know if you will even be alive tomorrow. Gosh, this is encouraging, isn't it? Imagine being in the audience as a Bible study. Back to the quote. One man who was diagnosed with terminal illness said, this illness caught me serving Jehovah full time with no skeletons in my closet. And that's a good feeling to have right now. End quote. Second quote. Imagine, though, how he would have felt if his illness had caught him saying, someday I will return to Jehovah. If you have left Jehovah, now is the best time to return. End quote of end quote. So encouraging. You may think you can come back to Jehovah so you can be in that paradise fantasy dream, but you better do it now. The clouds are upon you. And what if you get terminally ill and you haven't done it yet? Such an encouraging environment. All, as a Jehovah's Witness is told, courtesy of the God of love. I guess he can't see in the terminal guy's heart, so he's going to die because he didn't come back to the kingdom hall. It's just so sick. But there it is. Just a reminder, and for those that are maybe just exploring Jehovah's Witnesses, you must return to supporting the governing body, now nine guys in upstate New York, that are leading Jehovah's Witnesses, or Jehovah's just going to kill you anyway. Family gone? Check. Friends gone? Check. The chance to see my dead grandmother again? Gone? Check. Riding that elephant? Gone? Check. On and on it goes. What most Jehovah's Witnesses do gain is the following. A sense that they're lost. A life that lacks purpose when they leave. A scary world they don't know how to navigate, including social environments, jobs, and more. When someone decides to leave Jehovah's Witnesses, they leave the fantasy. The void is so hard to explain to someone that hasn't felt it, but it's real. And note that while I don't have all the answers, I wish I did, I can only tell you that it does get better and you move closer to acceptance. And might I add, I can't recommend therapy enough for anyone that leaves and experiences the void. If you have access to counseling and you can, please, please, please do consider it. I can't recommend it enough. And please note this, that this is a very specialized pain. Not every therapist is equipped for this type of challenge. So be upfront with one when you meet with one and what you're dealing with. If you can, in any level, please seek therapy and someone that's an expert in this field. And then there's the very strange dynamic. And again, really, what am I doing here? Providing validation, because there isn't an easy answer to this. But there's a very real dynamic that some have never believed the fantasy, and they actually leave Jehovah's Witnesses when sometimes as an adult, sometimes almost instantaneously as a Bible study who is an adult, and they leave with really few scars. They don't leave with that void. But I got to tell you, that isn't the norm, not with the people I've experienced, nor myself personally. Many leave with a feeling of loss. And it often leads to questions about something many Jehovah's Witnesses never, ever believed they would personally face. Mortality. To this day, many fantastic people want to know how I personally deal with the reality of mortality. I'm just coming clean. I can only say this. I'm still dealing with it. I've never tried to convince someone that reality was better than their fantasy. Who wouldn't want to live on a paradise earth, ride elephants, and eat the perfect pineapple? Who doesn't want to see their grandparents again? Who doesn't want to see a parent, a child that passed away? It's a damn good fantasy, but it's not real. And I can only emphasize that reality is just that. It's real. I feel strongly that you can't dismiss how gut-wrenching this can be for someone that had completely bought into the future paradise fantasy pitched by Jehovah's Witnesses. You're never even going to die, was part of their dream sequence. You're not even going to grow old. This messaging began back as early as the 1920s, with most of those people growing old over the last century and dying. And it continues today. If you go back to the beginning of Judge Joe's campaign for all things fantasy, you have to include that great book, Millions Now Living Will Never Die. Imagine publishing this. On page 97, we find his words where he said, quote, that the new order is coming in and that 1925 shall mark the resurrection of the faithful worthies of old and the beginning of reconstruction, it is reasonable to conclude that millions now living will never die. We must reach the positive and indisputable conclusion that millions now living will never die, end quote. It never gets old. If you approach a Jehovah's Witness today and you ask them about this book or this indisputable claim, they're going to say it's old light. They're going to dismiss it without ever thinking about the people who read it in 1920, 1925, and the years and decades following this. While the fantasy is old, they still push it as a reality in 2024. The now mothballed Proclaimers book even saw fit to reprint it for modern Jehovah's Witnesses. The Watchtower of August 15th, 2009. Most of the people who read Millions Now Living Will Never Die are in fact dead. But on pages 15 through 17, they continue to brag about this book. My generation never thought we would grow old or face dying. Do you know what that does to someone's brain, their mind, their decisions? If you go to their library online and type in never die into the search bar, prepare to feel sick to your stomach. The references include a cut and paste statement, I should say, found in the Watchtower on the final page, almost always on page 31, included in the Watchtower magazine. And you're going to see, if you're looking at the references in the library, that it was reprinted, cut and paste, year after year after year in the Watchtower. Please go check this out. It is literally on their website at this very hour. What does it say? It says this, and I'm just going to pull from one near and dear to my heart, the 1980 version of this cut and paste message that went out to the planet, most especially Jehovah's Witnesses, from the Watchtower of 1980, April 1st, page 31. The title is this, cut and paste over decades. Many now living will never die. Quote, this is no wild assertion. There are sound reasons to believe it. The Watchtower and Awake magazines regularly point to these Bible-based reasons. You will receive both magazines, 4 copies a month, for 1 year by sending only $5 US to Watchtower, Wallkill, New York, 12589. End quote. People, this was printed in the Watchtower year after year. You will see the references. I pulled from the 1980 version on page 31. I was 13 years old when that nugget of truth landed. But how about this? From the Watchtower of 1983, July 1st, page 17, we're told, quote, there are thousands of millions of persons living on earth today. Millions of these are now learning of the wonderful opportunity of keeping on living upon it without ever dying off it. End quote. You'll get the argument that, well, Judge Joe made up this whole thing in the 20s, and then in 1935 there was a great crowd. This is the 1980s. It shaped the minds of countless thousands, if not millions, of Jehovah's Witnesses. The way they viewed this world, the way they think, the way they navigated the planet was all built around this fantasy. And then one day it's gone. In the Watchtower of 1989, January 15th, page 31, questions from the readers, my kinds of people, we get this, quote, but Bible prophecy indicates that we today have a special opportunity. Living as we are in the conclusion of the system of things, we may survive the coming great tribulation and pass right on into the new world. Such ones who have the hope of everlasting life on a paradise earth and who maintain their loyalty to God will not have to experience human death at all. Surviving the great tribulation, they will be guided to fountains of waters of life. End quote. 1989. Spiritual food from the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses that was wreaking havoc on the lives of the people that were loyally following them, this guy included. And at the point of that reference, I was now 22 years old. And I'll stop there because there are many, many more. But it's for this reason, for anybody that's in my age group, that Gen X crowd, that I really believe that generation who's come out of Jehovah's Witnesses or who has survived a lifetime of it is really just becoming, with each passing day, a special generation, so to speak. We lived in a fantasy. We lived in the fantasy that we would never die. We never thought about it. And the damage it does to us now as we age is incredible. We realized it was a lie. And we now, at some point, depending on where we are on that journey out of that organization, we have to face the reality, realities we never thought we would. And we see the reality of their lies, their fantasy, every single time we look in the mirror. We are aging. We're getting old in this system of things. And we're going to die. But we bought into the message. The Awake of May 22nd, 1969, by now so many know of this, page 15. We're told this, quote, "If you are a young person, you also need to face the fact that you will never grow old in this present system of things. Why not? Because all the evidence and fulfillment of Bible prophecy indicates that this corrupt system is due to end in a few years. Therefore, as a young person, you will never fulfill any career that this system offers. If you're in high school and thinking about a college education, it means at least 4, perhaps even 6 or 8 more years to graduate into a specialized career. But where will this system of things be by that time? It will be well on the way toward its finish, if not actually gone." End quote. Face the fact, evidence, all kinds of debilitating words and promises and fantasies that generations of people bought into. This was in 1969. I was 2 years old. I'm 56. If you're a Jehovah's Witness listening to this, some of these quotes, these promises, how do you feel about it in 2024? They said it was a fact. Jesus, guys, while he watched on from heaven, even told them to put this to print, to tell us all about it. I don't know how anyone logically can minimize this. Even if this doesn't impact you personally because you're a younger person, you weren't even alive when these promises were made, don't dismiss what it did to the generations of people that used to be your age. I can relate to it. We bought into it. They lied. They continue to lie. And if you're younger, you will soon be the generation that is impacted just like we were. So it's a lot of negative. It's a lot of crap. But you're likely asking, hey, come on. Okay, we know this stuff. What's the answer? What do we do about all of this? How do I deal with it if I'm facing this reality for the first time? The truth is, there's just no easy way to say this. It's hard. It's really hard. At most, I can offer validation and the promise that with time and with help from some professionals who specialize in this, you can undo some of the damage done by this organization, including the fact that we don't tend to realize some of this until we're out of the organization and sitting alone daydreaming. And look, real talk, there's really no easy way to get over all this. This all-encompassing thought that you don't have to even consider getting old and death itself, it's a grim reality. And the reality is that current generations realize it isn't true, and they may have an easier time than this. It's really fascinating to me to watch people, other activists and whatnot, saying that they left without really a lot of pain outside of the shunning piece of it, without ever considering the mental and emotional crippling things that come from believing in a fantasy your whole life. It's really a unique thing with older generations who are now facing that inevitable truth. We're getting old. We're aging. And adding insult to injury is the reality in all of this that we've been duped. Most of us have to deal with feeling foolish or gullible. Like, how can I believe this lie? I see it all the time. folks my age or older going, how in the world was I this stupid? Let me stop you there. Be kind to yourself. Most of us were kids. We didn't understand this stuff. We didn't have the other reference points I mentioned earlier. And for a moment, I'm going to share something. Look, I don't know any other way to say it. It's uncomfortable. It may seem harsh. It may seem like I'm, you know, beating us up a little bit. I'm not. I just think it's important to tell the truth. But I get it. Even I squirm when I consider I fell into this bucket as a Jehovah's Witness. I bought into it. I'm going to read directly from Psychology Today, Dr. Bobby Hoffman. He's the PhD, and he wrote an article, You're More Gullible Than You Think, which was published in October 11th, 2021. A little bit from him. He says, quote, susceptibility to bunk and succumbing to shady intentions likely means two things. First, you are a person who is prone to taking the path of least resistance toward reaching your goals. I'm already uncomfortable. Back to the quote. In practice, being easily convinced means it is less effortful for you to just agree and move on to the next thing than it is to spend your time arguing with yourself or others to no avail. You might also be the type of person who does not care much about justifying your beliefs. Thus, you concede to other opinions. Second, the beliefs you use to make your decisions may be unconventional and not map very well onto reality. In other words, you might rely on the wrong type of evidence or bad information when making choices. To figure out why some people succumb to gullibility pitfalls and why others do not, we need to examine a variety of other cognitive, emotional, and cultural factors related to flawed decision-making. End quote. Ouch. Ouch. I know. But if we're being painfully honest with ourselves about ourselves, does any of that sound familiar? Just move on to the next paragraph. Don't think about it too much. That guy said it, and he's an elder. He told me it was true, and he's a circuit overseer. My parents told me this, and they would never lie to me. Ouch. We've been trained to be gullible. That's at least the truth for most of us that were born into Jehovah's Witnesses. And I've said it before, laziness and fear are the cocktail of the governing body. For anyone wondering if they purposely know what they're doing to Jehovah's Witnesses, let me assure you that they do. But how about just a bit more harsh reality about our own trappings inside their fantasy world? The doctor goes on to share what he calls some root causes of gullibility. And I want to note here that he isn't talking about cults, but it applies. He gives three. How about number one? You tend to unconditionally respect authority and tend to conform. Ouch. Quote, when someone who is in a position of actual or perceived power, doctors, lawyers, professors, significant others, might I add, nine guys who claim Jesus talks to them, when they make a request, we often assume they know what they are talking about, and we automatically default to believing the person's perspectives are honorable and accurate. However, like every other profession in the world, high-status individuals also make mistakes, and some may also have devious intentions. End quote. I might just know nine guys like that. How about you? How about number two? You are overconfident in your knowledge. The doctor says, quote, the perception of ample personal knowledge blinds the gullible person to the reality that they are making a mistake when a credulous decision is evaluated. Even in situations where the evidence is highly suspect, the gullible person avoids asking for feedback or advice from others because they erroneously believe that asking for help or a second opinion reflects on their lack of knowledge, something they may be reluctant to admit. End quote. Does that sound familiar? An organization that tells their people not to study, they'll study for them. An organization that tells people not to gain knowledge outside their publications. An organization that says nine guys are all wise, don't question them. We've been trained to be this way. And that's why we buy on a fantasy that never made sense and can't be supported by their own holy book. But how about number three? You fail to use analytical thinking. The good doctor goes on to say this, quote, "Those who are less gullible are much more likely to use analytical thinking, which critically evaluates information before a decision is made. Instead, the gullible person relies on personal experience or intuition as the basis for decisions and may even reject known information because the questionable message at hand appears to be more salient or easier to understand." End quote. Check your brain at the door. It could be a bumper sticker among Jehovah's Witnesses. You're not encouraged to critically think or to analyze anything they say. To do so, you're told, is evil. You're becoming a mentally diseased apostate. And if you don't change back to the what they say is true, including a fantasy sequence where you never get old, you never die, you eat the perfect pomegranate, and you get to see your great-grandparents, if you don't believe that, even when it's not found in the Bible, you are a mentally diseased apostate. Does any of that sound familiar? Make no mistake, Jehovah's Witnesses are trained to be this way. I was. I can say unequivocally that I bought off on it all. And they're trained to be that way from day one, the second you are exposed to the organization. And it is not an accident. So here's my big message to anyone that's feeling the pain, who's living in the void, who's dealing with the fear of getting old, of dying, on top of everything else that comes with an exit of Jehovah's Witnesses, please, please be good to yourself. Go easy on yourself if you recognize this pattern in your own life. Listen, we do have to take some responsibility, especially as we're adults. As children, my God, is that abuse to teach children this, that this is real. It's abuse, plain and simple. As adults, we take a little bit more responsibility. But make no mistake, their responsibility is greater. And it is downright evil. I could go on with this subject, but let's stop here. More than anything, for some reason this week, after a couple of conversations with people that are hurting, I felt a strong desire to just offer validation. I don't have the answers. I'm just like everybody else, just some nut guy with a microphone. I'm going through it too. I'm getting older. I'm going to be gone. And I wanted to offer validation to any Jehovah's Witness that's exiting, dealing with these emotions, dealing with the void, dealing with a shattered fantasy. It's complex, and I got to tell you, it's real. But when it comes to pushing a fantasy, please know that they know what they're doing. The entire religion is built around fantasy. Don't let them off the hook for what they've done and what they're doing. For me, when I think about this subject of nine guys with firm control over an estimated 8+ million people, I feel like you have to go back to the basics. So for me, when I think about this whole subject of fantasy and the impact it leaves on the life of a Jehovah's Witness, those who are dyed-in-the-wool doing it today, those who are exiting and experiencing the void and the pain, I'd like to go back to the very book they claim was written for them. At Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 12 of the New World Translation, we are told this, quote, "Expectation postponed makes the heart sick," end quote. One thing is for certain. The leadership of Jehovah's Witnesses is responsible for making millions of people sick. Thanks for listening this week. Be kind to yourself. Wherever you may be well.